This podcast was originally recorded for Turfs Up Radio and repurposed for Around the Turf Scene podcast.
Party people, this is Beth Berry on Ahead of the Curb, Turfs Up Radio, your industry, your station. I am so excited about today's guest, today's topic. It is everything you ever wanted to know about pond management. I say pond, but we're going to probably talk beyond pond. We'll just say it's aquatics. We'll call it the aquatic day on Turfs Up Radio Ahead of the Curb. We are always bringing you the most innovative products. I'm Beth Berry. I'm the Vice President of Advanced Turf Solutions. We're based in Fishers, Indiana. Chip, I'm going on like, I don't know, my eighth, ninth month, something like that. And I've been in this industry 3 decades, and I was blown away when we hosted all of you to visit us about your integrity selling course, which it was a tremendous value add for all of us at Advanced Turf. But in the course of doing so, I had my socks knocked off with Precision Lab products. And so I've been a raving fan. Talk about you all the time on Turfs Up Radio. And for anyone who doesn't know Chip or is not familiar with Precision Labs, give us all the goods, Chip.
Well, that's quite an intro. First off, it sounds like I got to get you new socks.
You got to get me new what?
Socks.
Oh,
so we knocked your socks
you
off.
Did. I need new socks. Logoed, please.
And after listening to the party people thing, I was getting ready to pour myself a bourbon here. But
Feel free.
We can jump in here and start talking about, you know, pond and lake management. You know, I've been working with pond and lake management for about 24 years, and since starting with Precision. And initially, it's kind of scary, I guess. You know, people are hesitant. They're worried that there's going to be some kind of issue. They don't understand aquatics. It's foreign to them. You know, a lot of people have been in turf management, and they're comfortable out there spraying a three-way herbicide on turf day in, day out. But if you think about spraying a herbicide in aquatics, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? The reality is a lot of the herbicides we're using in lawn care are also the ones that we're using in aquatics. There are 2,4-D-based products. One of my favorite go-tos is from New Farm is the product SureGuard. They used to have it separately labeled, where SureGuard was labeled for the landscapes and turf uses, and Clipper was their aquatic name. And a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, they changed it. It's all in one now. So if you've got SureGuard sitting on your shelf that you're using in your lawn care landscape business, you could use it in your aquatic business too.
That's crazy. I did not know that.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're treating weeds, right, for the most part. I mean, there's 4 main categories of aquatic weeds. You've got immersed weeds, which are like cattails that everybody's familiar with, there's a lot of different immersed weeds. There's floating weeds, which pretty much are like your lily pad or duckweed or watermeal.
Now, wait a minute. Did you just call lily pad a weed?
Well,
I thought they were intentional ornamentals. That's what I thought they were.
What is the definition of a weed?
Something that is growing where you don't want it.
Exactly. That's from my Weed Science 101 class.
So it's in the eye of the beholder is what you're saying.
It is. You know, it's interesting. I was down in the Cincinnati area traveling with someone. We were looking at aquatic weeds application. And there was a whole bunch of lily pads down in the corner of this lake. And the guy's like, how do I keep those in check? And I said, you mean you can just go out and spray glyphosate, aquatic labeled glyphosate, or a diquat or something like that. That's going to take them out. You know, put a little surfactant with it and you can take all those out. He goes, no. I didn't say I wanted to kill them all. I wanted to keep them in check. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he goes, the lady that owns that corner planted a couple of those in remembrance of her husband. So she always wants to have her lily pads there. But he said, if I don't keep them in check, they're going to take over my whole lake. And so he's got to selectively, it's almost like edging, right?
Yeah, targeted.
You're just targeted a few of the plants, so you're not killing all of them. And people do that with cattails too. I mean, I love driving down the road and looking over and seeing, you know, some cattails along the ditch when you've got a little cluster. But if you leave some of those, if you don't keep them in check, they'll take over. They're very invasive. And so a plant growing out of place would be a weed. And so, yeah, you may be wanting to kill lily pads. And then in that same floating family, as I mentioned, the water mule and the duckweed. Now, those are two that people probably don't want to see anything or have those out there. But those are the floating ones. And then you have submersed weeds. There's a lot of different ones, hydrilla, pond weeds. I'm not going to get into a lot of aquatic weed identification here. And then you have algae, which is another category. So four basic categories: immersed, floating, submersed, and algae would be your four main categories of aquatic weeds.
Crazy. And are the products we're going to talk about today, do they address all those?
Well, that depends on how lengthy we get into discussing. I work for Precision Laboratories, and we do not make herbicides.
Right.
But I've done a lot of talks on those. And as I've already mentioned, you know, your aquatic labeled glyphosates or diquat, you know, Reward. And then I mentioned, you know, the SureGuard. There's a lot of others. I mean, C-Pro and New Farm, and there's so many companies that are making aquatic, applied biologists, applied marine biologists, Q-Train products. You know, so I think more than likely, rather than getting into specifics on herbicides, kind of talking, and people have their, what you'll find is a lot of the same herbicides. If you're trying to kill a submersed weed, typically your herbicides that contain 2,4-D or the SureGuard type products are the ones that are going to control 99% of your submersed weeds. When you're talking immersed weeds, we're talking more of the contact herbicides like the diquats and the glyphosates. And then floating weeds are also the same as immersed, where that pretty much we're talking, you know, your contact herbicides again. And then for algae, though, that's kind of a unique one. And so when you look at all the categories, and we focus more on the algae side of it with the products that we're selling, but, you know, the first go-to when someone's fighting algae is copper sulfate products. And I think we'll...
Hey, Chip, I lost you.
Or
Chip. Yeah, I lost you. You said copper sulfate, and then I lost you.
Okay, how about now? Am I back?
Oh, you are back.
All right. Sorry about that. The wonders of cellular technology.
Of course.
So copper sulfate, you know, are kind of the go-to for algae control, to at least kill it. But, it doesn't really have much of a residual to keep algae out. And so Precision Laboratories is more about addressing algae than it is necessarily addressing true weeds. But because a lot of times people have me speak to aquatic weed control in general, I can talk a little bit more at length. It depends on how much you want to get into talking about all the different weeds, or if you want to focus more on the algae side of what would you like to do, Beth?
Well, yeah. I want to do all of it, Chip. Do you have a half a day? This is actually a boot camp. Sorry. I know I said an hour, but I need like a half day boot camp on all this. First, let's go back to the fear factor, because I know this keeps a lot of turf and ornamental companies, a lot of landscapers out of this category because of the fear. Do you know why there's fear, Chip? Because when you go to get your license, most states require license to be a pesticide applicator. One of the first things you learn is proximity to water, right? And so
right.
I think from the earliest times we're being educated in this industry, we are always being taught to stay away from water in Florida with the phosphate bans. And you can practically apply nothing within certain proximity to waterways. So I think that's where some of the fear starts. I had shared with you when I was at a $3 billion company that also did two do it for you, lawn care. We bought a whole lot of koi fish, Chip, whole lot of them. So we became very aquatic shy in a hurry. And I don't know all the reasons why that was happening, but were we using the wrong products? Were we ineffectively identifying what problems there were in the waterways? Or why do we seem to kill koi fish? Or are they just so fragile the wind shift can change and they die?
Well, yeah, they are very fragile. And extreme temperature changes or whatever can cause issues. And I think a lot of times people, it's a concern, right? And so let's go back. You mentioned buffer strips or not getting too close to the bodies of water. To me, you know, so yeah, we want to avoid runoff of nutrients into the water. But how many studies have been done out there that show that turf is such a great filtration system and that the runoff isn't nearly as significant as what people are afraid of? And some of that comes, you know, with as much as it comes from agriculture, where now you have bare ground where you have maybe more runoff than you do with the filtration that a true good turf quality can do. But yeah, you want to adhere to your state laws and then choosing the right products. As I mentioned, I mean, we're using glyphosate and 2,4-D type products or 2,4-D cousins of 2,4-D, in aquatics along with Curard. I mean, if you're using those chemistries in lawn care, it's not that strange. It's just that they put the fear into you because if you're using something that isn't safe for fish or isn't safe for aquatic life, we're not just talking fish, but a lot of the EPA registrations require you to look at crustaceans and other impacts of species that to the normal homeowner or normal, you know, person, they're not even going to be aware that we just, you know, might have infected crawdads or something with an application. So as you register pesticides, they look at a lot of those criteria. I'm not in regulatory. I'm just having been in the industry for over 30 years, know that there's been little things like even to the point that if it irritates the eyes of the fish, doesn't damage them, doesn't kill them, doesn't cause them issues other than potentially just irritating their eyes, that's the reason that you can't spray Roundup Pro in a body of water, because the surfactants that are in Roundup Pro irritate the eyes of the fish.
And Chip, do we know this because the fish told us this, or were their eyes red or watering? How do we know this?
Well, I think they were going to the eye doctor or something. I don't know. No, they did the studies and they were evaluating, you know, in a lab or in a controlled circumstance, they've identified what ingredients are safe for aquatics and which are not. And there are things that you can add into the lake that will affect aquatic life and to a negative. And that's the ones that they don't register or ban or what have you. But the ones that are registered, they've done extensive studies on and shown that they are totally safe to the aquatic, you know, balance of the water, all the way from the fish to the microorganisms.
That is incredible. I hate to take a break while we're on a roll, but we must listen to this word from our sponsors. I'm Beth Berry. I'm Ahead of the Curb on Turfs Up Radio with my guest today, Chip Holmes from Precision Labs. We're going to come back and talk about identifying pond problems because I am a newbie in this area. I was embarrassed at how little I knew when Chip sent me the pre-read materials, but he's going to give us all the goods right after a word from our sponsors.
Maximize your profitability with the industry's most productive and powerful ride-on spreader sprayer from Steel Green Manufacturing. Steel Green machines come standard with a decked-out 23.5 horsepower engine, 30-amp charging system, and Donaldson engine air filtration system. With equipment customization, attachments, and accessories, Steel Green has a machine for you. Visit steelgreenmfg.com for more information. That's steelgreenmfg.com.
God, I hate to cut that song short because it's a good one. And I got a rock star with me today, my buddy Chip Holmes. Chip, I miss you. We got to travel for like, I don't know, 10 weeks across, you know, beautiful hot spots of America, hosting Advanced Turf Solution Winter Ed Series. And nobody knows more about your category than you. And we didn't do a proper introduction. This isn't your first rodeo or even your fifth. Give us the snapshot on Chip. What has your trajectory in this industry been like?
Oh, it's been fun. You know, I got a degree in agriculture back in the early 80s and went to work for Dow Chemical for about 3 years. Worked for Ciba Geigy, which became Novartis. I was with them for 12 years, left before they became Syngenta. And then 24 years ago today, actually is my work anniversary, I went to work for Precision Laboratories. And Precision, you know, Precision's a Chicago-based, you know, Waukegan, Illinois-based manufacturer. And they really are strong in the surfactant category of chemistries, but we've also, you know, we sell into the aquatic market and do a lot of turf and ornamental sales. Just like most chemical manufacturers that are in this industry, though, you know, 80% of our business is in agriculture and row crop. And so you know, it's nice to be able to leverage that research and that information to apply, and it gives us a broader scope of products available based on quantity, right?
That is an insane career. How much fun has that been? 24 years? I honestly didn't know that you had spent that much time at Precision. That is very, very cool.
Yeah. It seems like it's only like, I don't know, I can remember 10 years of it. The rest of it's a blur. It's just, it's been fun. It's busy. It's been a good company to work for. You know, that now the question at my age, people are saying, well, how soon are you going to retire? I don't know whether they want my position or they just want to get rid of me. But I'm like, you know what? You know, I'm having fun, and I really love my customers, and I'm making good money. So I'm going to keep going for several more years until my health gives out or it's not fun anymore. And that's certainly not the case today.
That's so funny. I get asked, when are you going to retire? Not that I'm retirement age, but like you, I've been in the industry my entire adult life. And I feel like I have retired. I mean, once you find the job that you just love, working with the people you love, amazing products and solutions for customers, and the technology, the ahead of the curve, that's why I named that show this, mentality of all the cool new solutions that are coming to the marketplace to solve problems are what keep me so excited. If you think back to when your career began and the types of science and technology that was available to solve problems, wasn't a whole lot. And as consumers have become more sophisticated, so have your products. So let's start with identifying pond problems. If you're a newbie to the category, and by the way, let me just preface this by saying results may vary. Your state requires different certifications. Some, I think most states require aquatic licensing, although Chip, you can fill us in on when and where that matters and depending on the products. But if you're just getting started in terms of identifying pond problems, what are the broad categories you would be looking for?
That's a great question. That could be very all-encompassing, right?
Well, what are the types of problems that with through your products and your partner's products of herbicides that you can actually solve for in today's world?
Well, I mean, things that you can do for almost everything. But so it goes back. So if you're managing a pond, or if you have a homeowner or a property manager that they've got mud or silt floating in their pond because up the hill somebody decided to do a subdivision and all that runoff coming downhill, and now you've got they call it turbidity, right, where you've got kind of that muddy look in your pond.
Sorry, Chip, could you say that word again? I've never heard of it.
Turbidity.
Okay.
And so you can use a product, aluminum sulfate, which is also called alum, will actually flocculate. I got to be careful how I pronounce
that. Yes, you
do.
That's an F word if I ever heard one.
It will flocculate or basically tie up those suspended silt particles and settle them to the bottom. And so you can increase your clarity of your lake by adding aluminum sulfate, or in some cases, some people also add calcium carbonate. But it takes a lot of calcium carbonate to do it. But yeah, there are steps you can do just to improve the clarity. Now, I'm not an expert in koi. You know, you brought up koi earlier, and I am not an expert in koi ponds in the backyard and how to manage those. I mean, when I was years ago, I had a 55-gallon aquarium. I've always equated a koi pond was more similar to me managing my aquarium than it is managing a pond or a lake. And so when I think of pond and lake management, I don't think of koi ponds in the backyard as much. You know, those are, like you said, they're very dainty, I guess. I don't know what word to use. They're very susceptible.
Fragile.
Fragile is a great word. This isn't about a koi pond management. This is about managing a slightly larger body of water that, you know, might be a quarter acre or 10 acres of ponds or lakes or even more, depending. But, So turbidity is one thing. You know, the other thing that happens, you want to try to balance your lake. It's interesting to me to see there are some natural lakes and ponds that are just clear and they don't require much maintenance. And a lot of times when we get into the man-made lakes, we're forcing something. We're putting a pond where it wasn't before. And so sometimes those ponds don't end up being very well balanced. Or even a pond that was balanced, if we change the ecosphere around them, if we change and there's more runoff occurring or more or things going into the lake, or as trees, you establish a lake and as the trees age and you've got leaves dropping into the lake over 20 years, now you've got all that sediment that's settled to the bottom and formed the sludge and muck on the bottom that create a whole nother nutrient load to that pond that wasn't there initially when you first constructed. Usually, you know, a brand new pond doesn't have a lot of problems right out of the bat. It's after it's established for a little bit and you start getting nutrient buildups and then you put in fish and maybe you overpopulate and now we may have a dissolved oxygen issue where there's not enough oxygen. So when I look at pond management, one of the first steps I look at is if you can add oxygen to the pond, you're going to set yourself up for success. And that could be just as simple as putting a fountain out there. Now, if you do put a fountain in, I like to use drop tubes that are about half the depth of the lake. So you're not just affecting the surface, but you're actually pulling water from deeper in it. So you get a good recirculation. Mm. And adding oxygen helps to balance that lake. There are natural occurring bacteria in that lake that are, you know, they're in the soil, they're in water, they're in everything. And those natural occurring bacteria will break down nutrients and just help balance out the lake in general. So adding oxygen, I love. I mean, is it an absolute necessity? Maybe not, but having a good oxygen content is also good for the fish that are in the pond or lake.
And it's aesthetically pleasing. So you're telling me in central Indiana, where the suburban neighborhoods have all of these man-made ponds in the ecosphere for different reasons, and they've added these fountains. I thought it was just a bougie thing, Chip, because I'm a Hoosier girl, but you're telling me it is actually adding oxygen and helping to thwart some of these issues you would encounter in aquatics?
Yes. And whether it's a fountain, a lot of people will also use what's called a diffuser. Going back to my example of the aquarium, you know, you've got those little bubblers in aquariums to put oxygen in for your fish tank, right? Because they don't have
oxygen.
So people put diffusers, which are basically some type of device that's laid on the bottom, typically, of the lake that has a hose that's a pump that's pumping oxygen in, and it's basically bubbling, adding bubbles into the water that add oxygen. And it just helps balance the lake. I have nothing to do with that side of the business necessarily. I've just seen such success with it as a first step. Now, you know, sometimes there's not power that's run to the lake or adequate where you can get it. If that's the case, there's actually some windmills that instead of pumping water out, like the old windmills on the farms were designed to, it pumps oxygen in. And there's other devices that people use, and some of them are solar powered, different things. But so yeah, that's the first step that people don't think about a lot of times. The reason too of having a drop tube, and this goes back to one of your first questions of why we're afraid. Have you heard the term, you know, my lake turned over?
No, turned over.
So people talk about, oh, the lake turned over. I grew up on a farm. My dad would talk about, oh, that lake turned over there. Well, when a lake turns over, what is happening is usually it's in the fall of the year. You get a cold snap. It could happen in the spring too, but you get an extreme cold snap and the water on the surface is colder than the water at the bottom.
Ah.
And that cold, when that water is colder, you know, cold water is heavier than warm water. The cold water wants to go to the bottom. If under an extreme situation, that cold water flips over and the lake basically inverts. So all the water that was on the bottom comes to the top. The water that was on the top goes to the bottom. And when that happens, you're stirring up all that debris on the bottom, which ends up consuming a lot of oxygen out of the lake. And the fish can actually suffocate and you can have a fish kill. And I think you can go back and look at people. Let's say you sprayed a home lawn, and this could be advantageous for your listeners that don't apply to ponds but are maintaining the properties around lakes and ponds.
Uh-huh.
Is when that lake turns over and it starves the oxygen or reduces the oxygen in the lake, the fish can suffocate, and then you end up with a fish kill that had nothing to do with anything you sprayed or nothing to do with anything going on other than Mother Nature.
Wow.
Caused that lake to turn over. And so by adding a fountain or a diffuser, and if the fountain has a drop tube that's more than 50% of its depth, so if you've got a 12-foot deep pond, you want a 6-foot drop tube, that will constantly keep that water in exchange, and you can avoid that lake from turning over.
That is crazy. I'm just feverishly taking notes here. Turning over. That's probably a farm term, too, I should know.
Who's
your girl? But one of the complaints. So when I was at Scott's Miracle-Gro, we had 42 inbound call centers, and aquatics was not a service we offered. But one of the consumer complaints that we would field most often that they were seeking a solution for was an unpleasant odor coming from it. So maybe it looked okay, but there was an unpleasant odor emitting from the local pond. What is typically the catalyst for odors?
Well, so you can get sulfur smells and different things depending on what you're filling, you know, the source of your water and where it's coming from. But a lot of times just a stagnant pond is going to start growing other species of algae or different things, like a blue-green algae is really a nasty thing. And there, I don't know all the other different sources of those odors. What I do know is if you're adding oxygen, if you're using, you know, we're going to talk in a little bit about our beneficial bacteria, doing things to help keep the lake cleaner and circulate the water within itself, those things are all going to help. I've had people before that have had noxious odors coming from the water, and through the use of our beneficial bacteria that's reduced the odors and made it more pleasant to be around, but it's also safer, especially blue-green algae has a lot of health concerns that can make you sick. And so it's a noxious species of algae that we need to keep in check and under control. And then, you know, I think just balancing that lake and between the oxygen and beneficial bacteria, you can reduce those smells.
Hey, Chip, sorry to interrupt you. We got to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors here. We'll be right back after this.
Increase nutrient uptake with Foliar Pack Armament. Armament technology protects nutrient ions from interactions, antagonisms, and tie-up, and it unlocks tied-up nutrients that are already in the soil. Armament enhances utilization by protecting nutrients and keeping them in a plant-usable form. It captures more cations than organic acids do, creating deeper, stronger roots and improved plant resilience. For lower overall inputs and reduced costs, ask your ATS rep about Fuller Pack Armament.
I just like to play music all day long. When I grow up, I'm going to be a DJ, but today we have way too much to cover in the limited amount of time we have left with my guest, Chip Holmes from Precision Labs. Chip is a rock star. I am so glad you took time away from your busy day, Chip. And the amount of time you invest with Advanced Turf Solutions and our reps and our customers, I can't tell you how much we appreciate it. So welcome back to Turfs Up Radio. I'm Beth Berry, Ahead of the Curb, talking about all things aquatics today. And, you know, Chip, you're working from home today in Illinois, am I correct?
Yeah.
I'm working from home today in Indiana. Even though our Fisher's office is 10 minutes from my home, I do record Turfs Up Radio in my home studio. But I have some repair people here today. So you might hear something in the background. It's just the world in which we live, you know? So I hated to cut you off because you were on a real roll about identifying pond problems and what can be treated and what cannot be treated. And the reason I was most excited, when I joined Advanced Turf, I started looking at accounts in Salesforce that were my former accounts at Real Green. So I only knew what software they bought, and I kind of knew from a turf and ornamental perspective what service lines they offered. But there has been this fear factor in turf and ornamental, particularly if you are providing residential services to even get that license and go after aquatics. But you've removed that fear for me today, Chip. I feel like I could go do it myself. And to know how much the science and technology have evolved over the years, the types of products that are truly effective. I live at Geist Reservoir, which is on the northeast side of Indianapolis, and we get this thing every year called algae bloom. And these folks have lived up here forever, but they just freak out. Is there anything that you can do to prevent an algae bloom, or tell us what you know about that?
Sure. That's probably the category of weeds that I've looked at the most, because that's the category of our product. You know, going back just a little bit on the herbicidal aspect, you know, I would be more concerned as a lawn care landscape guy of spraying the wrong herbicide that might affect an annual bedding plant in a landscape, or possibly getting drift into somebody's tomatoes on a garden, than what we're talking about doing in aquatics because of the proven chemistry. Talking about algae blooms, though, algae, for the most part, I mean, you can have some algae that survives during the winter or might even grow a little bit in the winter, but typically algae starts forming about the same time crabgrass blooms, right? Or crabgrass germinates.
Yep. Is that May?
The algae bloom,
May in the Midwest?
Well, I'm going to say 55 degrees.
Okay.
I don't know. Right now, right? This
may never happen
so
this year.
I don't know. But it's around 50, 55 degrees is when you start seeing algae grow. And at 60, that's when you're really going to start seeing it come on strong. And it's going to persist as long as those temperatures remain up like that. And, you know, algae is going to grow. It's there, right? It's just laying in wait. And so now if you have the right nutrient load in the water, and you have sunlight and the right temperatures, algae is going to grow. You know, if I took a glass of my well water and poured it and set it out and you know, on my porch and let it sit there for a few days, I'd start getting an algae bloom just in that glass of water.
So, I did not know that.
Well, my well water, it's pretty loaded. So I just put in an osmosis system for my drinking water in my house.
But, lots of nutrients there in the Midwest.
Lots of minerals. Lots of storage. So the algae, you know, trying to keep it in check. We talked about oxygen a little bit ago, and oxygen is a great thing because you're stimulating the natural bacteria that are there. And there are a few herbicides that do a nice job on algae. You know, I mentioned copper sulfate earlier, and there's a lot of different brand names of copper sulfate. You can still just buy straight copper sulfate. And then people have chelated the copper sulfates to make them a little bit more active, to make them have maybe a few days more residual. And so, you know, the product, a brand name that people recognize is Qtrine, but like C-Pro has Captain, and there's KT. There's several brand names of copper sulfates out there. And all of those are pretty effective in killing algae like Roundup would kill a weed.
Okay.
It's going to kill what's there, and that algae is going to die. And when it dies, it's going to sink back to the bottom, and then it's going to break down. And so 3 weeks later, all those nutrients that were tied up in the algae that you just killed are re-released back into the water. And usually 3 or 4 weeks after you kill it off once, it's all right back with a vengeance because all the nutrient load's still there, the temperature's still there, and now you've got another algae bloom. So the steps that we take to control algae, you know, one of the first things we look at is photosynthesis has to occur for algae to grow. And at Precision, we make products True Blue and Jet Black or lake dyes. We make a blue lake dye and a black lake dye. And people look at lake dyes thinking, well, they're just putting those in to make the pond look pretty.
Right.
It's not. The real reason to use a lake dye is that you're shading the lake. It's in effect, it's almost like putting a roof over it to block sunlight so that you have less aquatic weed and in particular algae growth. By inhibiting sunlight, photosynthesis can't occur. So when you use a lake dye, it will, as long as you've got 2 feet of water or more, it'll interfere with sunlight penetration into the lake and you'll have much less algae growth.
Whoa.
And so a lake dye is a very inexpensive way. You know, when I do an aquatic talk, I typically tell people to add oxygen and add a lake dye as their first step. Because lake dyes are very inexpensive when you look at the whole thing.
And it's an immediate response, right? So consumers and others look at that pond and go, wow, that looks really cool. And you have the perception of health when it's blue.
True, or black.
You know, black.
It's interesting. We used, you know, the original formulation almost had a little bit of a green cast to them. Aquashade was the first lake dye that was out there. And they have kind of a little bit of a greenish cast. Some people like that. Other people like more of a blue color. And then in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, black lake dyes have come on. And what's interesting about black to me, it makes it look like a mirror across the body of water. And if you've got some nice landscaping plants, it adds a reflective characteristic that really looks nice, especially in commercial properties or metro areas. But what's interesting to me, I find when selling lake dyes, people in more urban areas like the black color, and people in rural areas like the blue. They think the black looks murky or something.
I've never heard of the black, but the reflective piece of it would be really interesting. What's the residual on the colorants?
It varies by rates and by product. Typically with our products, if you have a pond that doesn't have a lot of water running out of it, or we don't get huge rains, up to 8 weeks. On an application. Now, typically I have people coming in about, you know, a month later and maybe spiking it with a little bit more just to maintain the colors that they want and maintain the shading. But if you get a bunch of rain and it flushes water out, outflow is one of the things that obviously we really can't control. And so if you've got a spring-fed lake or if you've got a massive amount of outflow going out of the lake, sometimes you would have to retreat more frequently.
Got it. Interesting. I can't believe we're running out of time here today. We've got one more break to hear from our sponsors. And then when we come back, I want to talk specifically about the best products your company has to offer.
Steel Green Manufacturing presents the SGXL, a multifunction applicator with industry-leading capacity and versatility, available this spring. As Steel Green's largest machine yet, the SGXL is still zero turn and has the agility to go where others can't. Maximize your investment with one machine that can do the work of three. Talk to your ATS rep for more information about the SGXL. Versatility, efficiency, maneuverability, SGXL.
We are back with my guest, Chip Holmes from Precision Labs. Let's hear it for Chip. So excited you joined us here today. Fun fact, Chip was on one of the first Turfs Up radio shows, and I'm not exactly spinning it up like a pro yet, Chip, but I hope you've noticed I can glide in and out of these breaks with a little more ease than when Then when you were with me on my rookie episodes, I'm so excited because we have a question from a listener right now that would like to know from you, the expert, Chip, if they have, okay, does an underground sprinkler system add oxygen to a pond? Oh, we didn't say sprinkler. Does an underground spring add oxygen to the pond? Spring that's feeding into the pond.
Interesting question. It depends on the source of the water, I guess, of the underground spring. I'm assuming it's the runoff coming out of a higher elevation down into a lower elevation. And so if it was exposed to the surface and has a lot of movement, it could contain some oxygen. Probably more so, it's just adding to an exchange of water. And having an exchange is going to create some oxygen, although I don't think it's going to be enough to dramatically impact it, just my opinion.
Got it.
Interesting question, though. I had never been asked that question before.
Well, now we'll dig into that some more. We may have a whole nother Turfs Up episode just to talk about that.
Well, that's possible. But I think, you know, based on time limitations, I did want to get to, we kind of touched on, you know, bacteria and the benefits that they do. And I think that's a critical thing to kind of get into before we wrap up. And
please.
And so we, as we talked about, when the algae, if you use, even using a copper sulfate where it dies or trying to prevent algae from occurring to begin with, there are beneficial bacteria already in the pond. And when you add oxygen, you're going to increase those populations. And that may be enough in and of itself. But at Precision, we offer a product called Precise Pond. And Precise Pond is basically a dormant beneficial bacteria that when you add them into your lake or pond and they're in the water and the temperatures are up there in the 50s, they tend to flourish. And you're inoculating the pond with additional natural bacteria that would be there normally. We're just elevating populations. And what these bacteria do is they actually break down nitrates and phosphates out of the water. So when nitrates are broken down, it's broken down to nitrogen and oxygen. So they're released as gases, not smelly gases like we talked about earlier, but they're nitrogen and oxygen. And it breaks down phosphates into phosphorus and oxygen. The oxygen is given off as a gas, and the phosphate is metabolized and utilized within the bacteria. So ultimately, we're reducing the nutrient load. And that nutrient load, it could be from runoff, it could be from grass clippings. More than likely, though, it's just that blood build up in the bottom from leaves and decaying organic matter, you know, even fish that die naturally, that you're reducing that muck or sludge. And so the Precise Pond actually will both attack the nutrient load that's in the water column itself, as well as it'll go to the bottom of the lake, and there's parts of it that will break down all that muck on the bottom, and you can actually gain, you know, 4 or 5 inches of depth out of a pond a year. So if you use it for 3 or 4 years, you could gain a foot of depth.
Wow.
And so that's kind of neat, you know, especially if you're swimming in it or you're trying to reduce that muck. It helps clarify the pond as well. And so it's been a really fun product to sell because it's natural occurring bacteria. We're not adding, you know, noxious things. It's not EPA registered.
So neither you don't need a license to use it in most states.
In many states, you do not. I know specifically Illinois. I've talked to the Illinois EPA. They do not require licensing for lake dyes that are not EPA registered. And so our True Blue and Jet Black are not EPA registered. And our bacteria are not EPA registered. If you're applying any product that has an EPA registration number, then yes, you'd need to be licensed in the state of Illinois. Some other states, anything, they require you to be licensed if you're adding anything into the pond. So you need to check your local state licensing requirements on that.
Got it.
The beneficial bacteria, a quick story. I back years ago, 2011, at the Ohio Turfgrass Conference, I had a booth, and I had a property owners association come into me from Muirfield Village, just the property owners, not the golf course. And they came to me and said, hey, we've got 7 lakes, there's 7 ponds around throughout our homeowners association, and they're just really, we've got 2 that we, no matter what we do, we can't clean them up. They've got a big algae problem. And so we talked it through, and they decided to try our product in those 2 worst ponds. And I said, let's do this. But I also wanted to gather some data from their application. So monthly, we took water tests out of their ponds that they were treating. And what we found was that they had high parts per million of nitrates and high parts per million of phosphates in the water initially before treatment. And the bacteria take a little bit of time to develop. It's not like when you apply a beneficial bacteria today that tomorrow you're going to see a response.
Right.
The bacteria have to pop the population. You're inoculating it. They have to multiply. And anyway, but over the course of 3 or 4 weeks, the populations get up to where you need them. So we took a water sample in April. They had high parts per million of nitrates and phosphates. We took another water sample in May. We were less than 10% of what they were originally. We got rid of 90% of that aquatic nutrient load. And then they took water samples every month thereafter. And there were subtle changes based on rainfall and runoff and things. But overall, we kept the parts per million of nitrates and phosphates down so low that they didn't have algae bloom. And I saw them later at the end of that year, and they said, well, the two worst lakes that we had became our two best lakes. So now we're going to use it in all seven lakes. And to my knowledge, since 2012, they've been using it in all seven of their lakes.
That's
with good
crazy.
Success.
And what was that product again?
That's Precise Pond. Yeah, it comes in water-soluble pouches. The other nice thing about, so our lake dyes, we make liquids, but we make our lake dyes in water-soluble packets, and we make our beneficial bacteria, Precise Pond, in water-soluble packets. So you don't have to get in a boat. You don't have to spray anything. You're just tossing packets in from the bank.
Wow.
And it makes it very easy for application. And that's one of the critical things. I mean, if you're a softball player, it builds up your pitching arm.
So. Now, is there a maximum size of a water area that you could use that service delivery method? Because, again, purchasing a boat or other expensive capital equipment has kept some away. What's the largest size you could do with that?
Well, that's a great question. I guess it depends on the diameter of the lake.
Or how good your throw is.
You got to be careful. You don't want to wing them too hard because you can rupture the packets. But we treated about a 10-acre lake down in Mississippi at one of the casinos with this from the bank, and it was fine. You have to go back, like in high school, if you remember the Petri dish, and you put a little drop of bacteria in the middle of the Petri dish and let it set for a week, and then all of a sudden the bacteria would spread across the whole Petri dish.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of the same thing here. Now, if you focus all of your application, if you just dumped it into one end of the pond, it wouldn't be as effective as if you could go walk around the pond and about every, 12 feet or so, toss a packet out and then walk a few more steps and toss a packet out. That you're kind of spreading it around and, get it out there, 10, 15, 20 feet from the bank. I've had great success with that. The other side of this, though, is the lake dyes are relatively inexpensive. Copper sulfate's a fairly inexpensive treatment, although it can add up with repeated applications. Our beneficial bacteria, they're not necessarily really cheap to use. So we don't get 10-acre, 20-acre pond treated normally. We're treating the 1 and 2 acre ponds, or maybe smaller, depending on what people's budgets are and what their expectations are.
Sure.
You are able to spot treat with this a little bit along, like if you spot treat along the front of a shoreline, and the packets will go down and work on the sludge that's there, but because they get diluted in the bigger body of water, you're not as quite as effective. But a lot of times the bigger body of water doesn't have the same issues that the smaller ponds do because they're more stagnant and they don't have as much flow going around.
That you've just blown my mind. You knocked my socks off. You've blown my mind today, Chip. I know that you can purchase Precision Lab products through Advanced Turf Solutions, but for any of our Turfs Up listeners that just need more information on all the knowledge you were dropping today, what's your contact information?
So our website is precisionlab.com. It's a great source to go to look at our aquatic page on our website. I think it comes up with kind of a banner page, and then you have to find the aquatic page. It's not that hard to navigate, but... And then my name again is Chip Oumes. The last name is spelled H-O-U-M-E-S. And if people would like to email me with questions, I'll be happy to respond. my email address is C Houmes, H-O-U-M-E-S. My first initial C, last name H-O-U-M-E-S, at precisionlab.com. Or they could reach out to me on my cell phone, which is 217-260-6943. Or they can text me. I do text. I may be old, but I'm
text. Functional. I love this industry because there's so many people like you that are like, yeah, give me a call, text me. I'll drop everything and give you all the goods on this. You've certainly been a fantastic partner for Advanced Turf, and I have learned so much. And you're going to help Turfs Up Radio listeners make more money and add services to their turf and ornamental business. And I have really enjoyed having you today. You have to promise you'll come back. And I feel like such a rookie radio host because we at Advanced Turf call you Holmes. Hey, did you call Chip Holmes today? Holmes, like it's bougie in French or something. And I did not even know that.
It is Dutch French. Derivative. So the one thing I didn't say is if you are choosing to get into the herbicidal application, check your labels for restrictions.
Oh, good.
You know, even though they're safe for aquatics, you can look at there, and some of them have some restrictions on whether you can drink the water or consume it. Some of them have, and that may go more with livestock or if your dogs are drinking it and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Most of them are relatively safe there in that aspect, and you can almost always swim in it.
Wow.
And you can consume the fish immediately after applications of most herbicides. But irrigation restrictions, if people are irrigating out of that pond, whether it's like a greenhouse or a commercial property or golf course or somebody that's irrigating, there are some restrictions on that because you're putting a herbicide out there that might affect the turf. So just check your label restrictions, but know that they're safe to the fish.
And
know that
they're,
you know, and then the other one is that I should always mention and, you know, watch out is if you're treating for algae with copper sulfate, don't treat more than a third of the lake at a time, because if you treat and kill all the algae out at once, it'll deplete the oxygen. And so you want to only treat a third of the pond with that. And you have to think about herbicides too. If you have a major herbicide or major milfoil population or a pondweed population and you kill all of them at the same day,
yep,
all that organic matter, when it breaks down, will deplete oxygen. Kind of like what we talked about when the lake turns over. You don't want to have too much of that going on because it can take oxygen out and that can cause some issues. So typical rule of thumb is don't treat more than a third of the lake at a time. Now, if it's all along the bank and you're just treating around the perimeter, I'm talking about a third of the total surface area.
Yeah.
So you could go all the way around the outside with no problem.
Sure.
It's just don't treat the 100% of the whole surface area.
Love that. Thank you for those cautionary measures. We're going to have to bring you back. I didn't even get through 10% of my questions, but we're going to have to call this a wrap today. I know I'm going to see you on the trails, Chip Holmes. This is Elizabeth Batty from Turfs Up Radio, your industry, your station. Thanks so much, my friend, and we'll see you soon.